Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
Good morning, friends. My name is Anele, and I'm an alcoholic. It's good to be here. It's good to see everyone gathered here. You know, it reminds me, you know, of my days when I was drinking. And I never thought, you know, there were people, you know, like me out there, you know. And by the grace of God, I happened to find this fellowship. And I'm grateful to be here, and I'm honored to be standing here today in front of you. I'd like to quickly thank the people that arranged, you know, this event for us. It's been, you know, an amazing work, you know, to get it to this point. I'm very thankful for that to those people. All right, so the topic of this meeting is how it works, you know, and I think it's one of those things that you get in AA immediately, you know, when you join it. You know, the first thing is read a portion of chapter 5 and, you know, it tells you how the program works, and that's the topic for this session. And yeah, by the way, I'm from the Moraleta group. I'm a local here. Welcome, you know, those who are coming outside of the province and outside of the city. I've got 4 speakers. Each of them would have about 15 minutes to speak on the topic. My first speaker is Lee W. And my next speaker is Danny B. My third speaker will be Louise K. And my final speaker is Sabelo. So I'll jump into it and I'll read a portion of chapter 5, the preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. That's it. The desire to stop drinking is the only requirement for AA membership. There are no user fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organizations, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any cause. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. All right, without any further ado, I would like to call up my first speaker, Lee W. Welcome. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Lee, and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you so much for chairing the meeting, to everybody else that is sharing, and to thank you to everyone else. I think a really very big warm round of applause is due to the committee and for everyone for putting this together. I don't know what I'm doing here. How does this happen? How does this happen? That's the question, isn't it? Well, how it works. It sounds like a question, doesn't it? I think most of us think it is a question because, let's be honest, I know that the majority of us ask, you know, how does it work? That's the question. And perhaps in AA they wanted to make people feel good, you know, and as if we were listening, you know, we were answering you. But it's not really a question, is it? It's a statement. How it works sounds like a question, but I think they threw the how in there just for fun, as I say. Only because people ask all the time, how does it work? How does it work? How does it work? But the reality is that I was thinking about it last night, and I don't think the how even belongs there. There's lots of really great answers. You know, there's all the right answers. Honesty, open-mindedness, willingness. There's a whole chapter on it. The one that, you know, you just referred to, which is chapter 5. People will see, you know, if you ask the question, well, how does it work? It'll be, well, there's a whole chapter. It's called How It Works. Open it up, read it. And something my sponsor would say is just a suggestion is you should try and read the black parts. The thing is that I don't even think the how is even relevant there, because it's not a question. The statement is really simple, and that very statement is actually the answer. It works. And like I say, I don't understand that. There are a million answers that any of us could tell you. There are so many right answers. But the honest answer for somebody like myself is very, very simple. And it's something that has taken me many, many years to continue to come to understand. And that is that it really all comes down to what the entire book, what the entire program, as my understanding, has been outlined and designed to help me get to. And that is to understand is that there's something much bigger than me. There's a power greater than me. There's something bigger than me, something that I do not understand, that can and will restore me to sanity, and has. I've been restored to sanity. I've recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And I know that because when we were coming through this morning, when I say, how does this happen? If there was a one-sentence answer to how it works, you know, we'd all be multi-billionaires. It is simple, but it's not. Well, because you're dealing with us, I suppose. But coming here, I was on the heart ring, and I don't know why. I was doing some prayer and meditation, as I like to do in the morning, as I do every morning. And suddenly, and I was at step 11 prayer, which is continued to, you know, seek conscious contact. Anyway, and I'm doing the prayer, and I always try and be quiet. You know, they say prayer is asking, meditation is listening. And in that moment of listening, suddenly the quiet in the heart ring, and the view from outside the window, all the surrounding landscapes as we were going past, got really loud and got my attention, if that makes any sense. And I looked up and the sounds of the train and the view, and it actually makes me emotional thinking about it. I was suddenly taken back to when I was 19. And I was actually, in fact, going in the opposite direction, also on a train. I was 19. And I had just left my mom and some guy at the station who had put me on the train to go to a rehab in Noord. And I think by that point, 19, I'd already overdosed three times, been in probably my ninth rehab at that point. I'd been to hospitals, the ODs, you know, I had done the rounds. I had been in the meetings. I had done everything. So by 19, and I'm back. I'm back just doing another day. Same old picture. I'm still alive. It still doesn't work. Nothing works. Nothing will work. Nothing will change. Here I was, just living this life. Why was I still alive? That was a question that I had from when I was actually quite little. I never understood the level of my existence. It was too painful. And so when I say this afternoon or this morning, driving here and being taken back, excuse me, to a place that I lived in my entire life. You know, they talk about it in A Vision for You. You know, when you wish that you're at the jumping off place and you will wish for the end. You'll know a loneliness that few, you know, a loneliness that a few do. I've misquoted it. Nothing had changed. On, off, in, out, up, down. I used, drank, didn't, whatever, rehabs. You know what I mean? The cycle, it was interesting when I think back over it now. My life was like a drain. It just kept going and going and going and going. It was always the same picture. But today, this morning, driving through, and suddenly, as I say, hearing the sounds of the train and watching the view outside. And this time, I was going forward, literally. When I was there, 19, going, it was going the other direction. Whether it was or wasn't, I don't know. But that's how it is in my mind's eye. Off to another rehab. And it would be another good 20, 30 years or something before I would still come right. And this morning, you tell me what happened. How did it work? What worked? Did something work? Because this morning, after having that memory come back to me, I realized I was going this way. And in the train is my mom, who's here, and other friends that I've made in the fellowship of the program. And I might be recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body around alcohol and all, you know, addictions. There's no question about that. But I'm a baby in this deal. I'm a baby. There's so much more that I still have to do and learn and grow. I consider myself a newcomer. So there's a lot of work to be done, which is great because I really need it. And because I found a way to do it. But here I was sitting, and now suddenly there's friends and there's family. And I find myself sitting here. Being asked to share, and I'm standing here in front of you, and the reality is that I have nothing to do with that. I want to say, if you get to the chapter 5, how it works, maybe let me, if you like me, if you're a real alcoholic addict of my kind, and I just throw in addict, but it's alcoholic of all kinds, basically, it's not fussy, it'll do anything anytime, Not if you're a real alcoholic of my kind, the hopeless variety. Where it speaks about the pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. That's me. My middle name. If you get to step 5, I want to say not if, when. If you're lucky. I got lucky. When we get to chapter 5 and read how it works, it's not a question. It does outline there quite simply the beginning, very simply in a couple of pages. It actually says in the next page and on the page afterwards, it actually has the answer, although it'll take perhaps years to actually, I think that's what the journey of recovery is to start to really get closer and closer to the real answer of how it works. Because on the second page, right there in chapter 5, on the second page, it gives me the answer. And it's funny because I'm the kind of person who looks everywhere else for the answer. Everywhere but where it tells me to. It says that we stood at the turning point. Right? And then later it says, may you find God. And then it tells us the answer. And it gives me a place that I really hardly ever look. May you find him now. Right now. And on the second page, where it starts to get into the real deal of how this works, is where it says this is the how and why of it. I always thought alcohol and drugs and all that and other people and everything else was my problem. And it would take me nearly 30 years to come to understand that that's not my problem, and it never was. In fact, that was my solution for a long time. Well, a reasonably long time. My problem has always been and will always be, long before, during, obviously, and after. My problem has always been me. And the how and why of it is only the beginning of understanding how this, the way I think, and the way I feel, and the way I perceive myself and the world, it's so distorted. My sponsor says it beautifully. He says, you know, we suffer from a disease of perception, coupled with the disease of separateness. You know, always feeling alone and different and separate. But for me, it's all mixed together, perception. And my perception determined and molded who I would become. And it's amazing that I'm still alive, and I don't say that in a way of, oh, I'm still alive. I mean, because when I think about my perception of myself and you and the world, my whole life, and then the way I reacted, like I say, alcohol and drugs and everything else was my solution. How and why I would still be here to get through in spite of myself is really quite amazing to me. This is the how and why of it. I had to quit playing God. Getting clean, getting sober was the hardest thing in the world for me. It really, really was. Obviously, it took me many years. But so I thought. I've only come out now to realize that it's the easiest thing in the world. Go punch a cop in the face. I promise you, you'll stop. I've stopped many, many, many times. Stopping, however, and staying stopped, that was the problem, and I never understood it. I never understood that it was when I stop, that's when the beast really, I mean, there's a devil of a beast when you're in it. But it's when I stop, there's a reason we go back. There's a reason people go back or kill themselves. Remember in the vision for you? Why do we get to the jumping off place and wish for the end? It says because we are not happy about my sobriety. You're clean, you're sober. This is my problem. I have always been the problem. And how it works, and the big book, and the 12 and 12, have become words that over the years have started to come alive. The more I've wanted, first I had to read them, I didn't want to. But then as I started to do them and understand the very simple process of following the steps, understanding my problem, you know, understanding my powerlessness over every single day, excuse me, needing to, you know, reminding myself of step 2 and 3 to be restored to sanity and handing my will and life over to the care of God, of something, excuse me, bigger than myself to do for me what I cannot on my own. 4 and 5, I've got to keep on cleaning out this baby. And then, of course, making right and the continued ongoing building relationship with this power that, as I said before, I don't understand. And yet I have to get close to it. I have to keep working it because, as I said, to come back to the very beginning of what the very simple answer that spoke to me very loudly last night. Excuse me. Is that where the program is beautiful and it's given me a design for living that I have to and do every day that works. Doing the work, cleaning house, trusting God, and helping others, which is really the simple version of what this deal's about. The reality is that how it works is that something much bigger than myself, something that I do not understand, something that I did not believe in, something that I still question, if I'm honest. I can pray and meditate and talk about all I want to, but having faith and trust are two very different things. And I'll end off with this, but that is the answer, whether I like it or not, whether you like it or not. Most of us have issues. If you're like me, I had big issues. But if it's got nothing to do with me, and I and my own power could never get here, if there was no human power that could ever help me, and as it said, relieve me of this alcoholism. And that be whether I was drinking or whether I'm sober and clean. It's irrelevant. You know, there's a difference between being sober and then embarking on the journey that will allow me to start to tap into the most beautiful world, and that is called sobriety. Yeah. There's two beautiful stories I have. Now, which one to choose to end off with? The one about faith and trust, or the one about where the answer is? I'll go with the answer, and you'll like it, because in my sponsor, I've never met him personally. He stays in LA. So that's a 10-hour difference, right, from where we are. In fact, he's never been to the South Africa. Am I finished? Shut up. My apologies, my friends. I didn't see that I had a sign here. Does that mean no story? 5 minutes? Time is over, my friends. We're not going anywhere if we're lucky. If we're lucky, we'll be here, and I'll be able to share wonderful stories and be able to hear wonderful stories you also have. Thank you. It's work. It's simple. Don't think. Don't listen. Read the black part and do it, the action, and you'll find out for yourselves the answer. Thank you so much.
First and foremost, I believe that the God of my understanding, He is the writer of the script of life, and that we, in all the world as we are, that we are just role players. Good morning, everybody. I'm Danny. I'm definitely an alcoholic. I first and foremost like to thank the Pretoria Convention Committee for affording me this opportunity to share with you my story and how it encapsulates with the slogan of how it works. You know, I need to confess that it was in this very province, I'm from Port Elizabeth, it was in this very province in Johannesburg where I had my first drink. I think I was in grade standard 8 then, as it is grade 10 now. And I never dreamt that I would be coming to this very same province to come and share my story with you. From what I'm going to share, you will have to deduce from that how it really works and how it worked for me. Started here in 1981, and I had a couple of beers with the guys. The guy said, "Hey, but you must be a big guy now, man. You're in standard 8. You must doing fine in school, so you might have a beer." And the mere fact that they said that you are a big guy, you are a big guy now, that went to my head, and I said to myself, "Why not? Give me that can." I can still remember it was one of those long toms, Lion then. And I think I had about 6 of those for the day and was a tipsy. Promise you, I was drunk. But in any case, that's where it started. And I went back because I was on holiday then. And I went back and it continued. And funny enough, it was as if my parents condoned it. Because when I got home, I told them I went to my first disco, and they said, "Oh, no, good." And it continued like that. They encouraged me to have a life, if we can call it that. I only drank weekends. Fortunately for me, academically, there was no problem with that. Because academically I performed, and even after matric I went on to go to university. But as many of us know, that going to university, you're like a loose cannon. Because there you can do what you want and when you want to do it. So alcohol was there all the time, and one must remember it was also during the struggle years. So apart from being involved in the struggle, which coincided basically with the alcohol, and that became part and parcel of my life. I'm still amazed when I'm standing here and speaking to you, and I ask myself, I can't remember how I completed my first degree, because I still believe most of the time I was drunk. But fortunately enough for me, and as my higher power would have had it, I completed my first degree. Continued, I went on to do a second degree, my postgraduate degree. But then after that, it was a question of seeking work. And unfortunately for me at that stage, it wasn't that easy. because you are either overqualified or you had no experience. So the drinking continued, and it escalated, as a matter of fact. And then where we eventually got my first assignment as a candidate attorney, my reason for continuing to drink was because the money that we received was so little, and my frustration was that I took it out on that. So I drank even more with money that I didn't have. But just a bit of one of my experiences during my student days. You must remember, students doesn't have money all the time. And what we used to call then, we shabalazat to get a couple of some bucks to have a drink. Now, when we did this, there were some of the guys who used to say that, hey, you must remember one thing, guys. God is good, but the devil isn't that bad. Because just have a look at this. I mean, he organized all this alcohol for us. If only I knew then what lied ahead for me in the future, I would definitely have not agreed with him then. But in any case, so it escalated, and I continued to drink. But during 2011, I think it was here by the end of June, I started to ask questions. And I asked myself, but hey, but what's going on here? I mean, here you're sitting with 2 degrees. And I asked the God of my understanding, you've given me this, but what am I doing with it? Fair enough, I was in practice, fine, it's not a problem. But what fulfillment did I get out of this? What meaning am I to my community? What meaning do I have for my family? Because it was at this stage where everybody was already talking about, hey, there's a drunkie coming on again. Yeah, there's that, you know, and I felt at that stage, hey, my self-respect was dwindling. And I sat with God. And on numerous occasions after June 2011, I would sit every morning having a babalas, asking these questions on a constant basis. And I ask him, can't you make this thing better for me? And eventually, on the last Monday of October 2011, my cousin came to me and his question to me, are you sick again? Because that was the norm on a Monday morning. Are you sick again? I said to him, yes. He said to me, yeah. Due to this alcohol, your body is so weak that you get sick for anything. But your biggest problem is, I'm going to put this in Afrikaans, jy is te slim for yourself. Yo! And that you don't. On numerous occasions in the past, people have told me these words. You are too clever because you've got an answer for everything. But on this specific morning, when he uttered those words to me, it really hit home. And I lied in that bed and I said to myself, Danny, jy is te slim for yourself. And as my higher power would have had it, I think he must have just left the house, gone to the back, he came back and he said to me, can I take you somewhere tonight? And I said, yes. For the first time that morning, I can remember, I got up and cleaned my mouth. I went to him for my first meeting. And it was at that meeting where I said, after hearing two speakers, I said, God of my understanding, if this is your answer to my prayers, allow me to be here, to remain here within the AA rooms for as long as you want to. I went to that first meeting, and during that first meeting, the one thing that came to mind, or the one thing that I remembered during that meeting, was these words, if you want what we have. And I said, but I want that because these guys are supposed to be sober. And I want that. And I made a pledge with God that evening, and I said, I'm going to remain sober. But I had 5 opportunities after that where I had a drink. And believe you me when I tell you this, I had a pledge with God, with the God of my understanding. And after all of those occasions, I drank for 5 times. Never had I had a single babalas the next day. The next day when the guys came to me to say that, yes, years of babalas, dog, I said to them, your party was last night and not today. And for that, I can only praise and thank my higher power. I just want to touch, seeing that my time is running out, I just want to touch on the issue of making amends. I was working, I'm working this program, and I'm working it to the best of my ability. And one day, on numerous occasions, myself and my sister had arguments. On one day, one specific day when we had an argument, she told me something that I wasn't happy with. And I said to her, you are stupid. But immediately after that, I sat there and I said to myself, but I belong to a program. And there are certain principles with which I will have to adhere to. And I got up and I went to her and I said to her, my sister, I'm sorry. I was wrong. It's an ugly thing to tell anybody that you are stupid. So I humbly apologize. I hope and pray that I'll never do it again. A couple of weeks went by. She accepted. A couple of weeks went by, and then we had an argument again. And then she said to me, yes, but you are the guy. You are the guy who told me I am stupid. Wow. And I said to myself, but I apologize. And I said to her, but Miranda, I apologize. And she didn't bother. She didn't come back to me. And I was sitting there and I asked myself, hey, how's this thing now working? This thing was not like, it's not working for me. Because I apologize and now this thing is being thrown back to me. And believe you me, whilst I was sitting there, after about a couple of minutes, she came back to me and she apologized. And it was then that I say, dear God, my higher power, the God of my understanding, this works for me. I thank you.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Louise, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm grateful to be here this morning, grateful to my higher power, and I'm a very grateful member of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'd just like to say a big thank you to the organizing committee, Anela, for chairing this meeting. When I first saw the topic about how it works, I just thought of the fact that I knew more about how it doesn't work. And so that's basically, I'll get to how it works, but I can share with you my experience with how it doesn't work. First of all, it started like when I started drinking. My first big mistake was believing that alcohol is the solution to all my problems. It made me happy, it made me fit in, made me feel like I liked the way it made me feel. And from early on, I worshipped alcohol. It had become my master. And I continued like this for over 20 years, worshipping alcohol because it was the solution to life. I couldn't do life, and it had all the answers for me. What didn't work was running away from jobs when people wanted to tell me about my drinking problem, believing that they didn't like me, had something against me, were jealous of me. So I basically moved all over the country, running from job to job, place to place. And what didn't work was doing anything and everything to get my alcohol. I needed it, so I did whatever it took to get my alcohol. And it didn't work because when I ended up not having a job, I could still drink, but I had to use like my body, you know, with men so they could buy me my alcohol, which wasn't very clever because at the end it didn't work because I got infected with HIV. But still, I continued, and it took me a really, really long time to acknowledge that alcohol was my problem. I never believed it. You know, I'd always defend it. But it took me almost killing 5 children to make me realize that there might be a problem and alcohol doesn't work. And with at that, I ended up at my first rehab. And when I got there, I learned that I had a disease, the disease of addiction. And I thought, okay, then, you know, I understand, but, and I realized that I shouldn't drink. And I also was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. And at the back of my mind, which didn't work, was believing that the reason I drank abnormally was because I had a mental illness. So I did leave that rehab. What didn't work was not doing anything about what I learned at the rehab. It was like, you know, if you see a good movie, that feeling you have afterwards, you know, it kind of fades by the end of the day or even by the end of the week. So that's what rehab was like for me. By the end of the month, I'd forgotten what I'd learned. But I did stay sober. Well, I wouldn't say so, but I think I would say I stayed dry. I didn't practice anything that I learned in the rehab. Definitely didn't work. And eventually I relapsed after 4 years. I didn't understand why. Again, I took that knowledge of knowing that I had a disease. It wasn't my fault. I have a disease. And secondly, it's this bipolar madness. Anyway, then I ended up in my second rehab, and what didn't work there is that I believe that it was a very spiritual rehab, religious rehab, and you had a spiritual counselor, you did the church thing and read the Bible and everything, and I believe that my life would work out if I followed this to the T. So when I left that rehab, I did the church, I did everything, read the Bible, and I thought that that was going to keep me sober. But what happened, why that didn't work, is that I was going to a lot of different churches, and one church I went to, I just eaten my supper, and they punched me in the stomach, and then I threw up, and they told me I had demons. So that was that. That didn't work for me, so I went out again, drinking. What also didn't work for me in this period is like the lies I told, you know, my family, telling them that, you know, where I worked, people didn't like me, I was cursed, and they came up with their solution. You know, I had to go see a witch doctor. And I got thrown in the river at 4 a.m. in the morning to get cleansed. But that also didn't work. So that's my story about what didn't work. And then eventually, I was at a point where I was desperate. I needed something to work. And remember, I said, alcohol is my solution to life. And it was causing me more problems, you know. I was drinking because I had to, but but then I didn't want to. So I was at a point where I didn't know what to do. You know, I was just like, I gave up. I was suicidal. And I just told myself that, you know, there's no point of me carrying on because there's nothing that is going to work for me. I've tried so many things, you know. I've been to mental institutions. I've seen social workers, therapists, the works. Nothing is working. So there's no hope for me, you know. And another thing was like, I had this belief also that, you know, I didn't want my HIV to kill me. So I said, if I drink, at least I'll die from the drinking, not the HIV, which is much better. And yeah, so anyway, I was on my last legs, depressed, suicidal, and my higher power must have been looking out for me because I did take one last step and tried another rehab. And at this point, I believe that I was just going there just to dry out and, you know, and try again, I guess. But that is where I was first introduced to the 12-step program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, oh yeah, I had tried AA one meeting before, and it didn't work for me because I felt like I didn't belong. You know, it was people there were not my age, and they were the wrong color, and I said, I can do this on my own. I'll download the big book, and I'll do the step work all by myself and everything. I tried, got to step four, gave my step four to my psychiatrist. I haven't got back to this day. So that didn't work. So the rehab I went to taught me three things. Before I even started anything about how it works, it was basically the word how, honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. I was so desperate that I realized that I had to be honest about every single thing I did if I wanted to get the help I needed. And that's where it all started for me, honesty. Open-mindedness, I realized that my best thinking was what got me into all the trouble that I gotten into, and I needed to trust other people to help me. So when they gave me suggestions, I took them as instructions. And willingness, because I was so desperate, I was willing to do whatever it took. And that was the start for me. The second thing I realized was the meetings. We went to meetings, about 3-4 meetings per week. And in those meetings, I saw characters of all kinds, black, white, you know, it was just full, old, young, crazy, beautiful. And I felt like I belonged. And, you know, because I was a person who needed to belong and I didn't belong. That's why I drank alcohol. I needed to fit in and belong. But then I belonged in these meetings. And when people shared, they were telling my story. And I thought I was special and beautiful, that my story was, you know, unique. But here I was hearing stories that sounded like mine, even worse than mine. And if there was any doubt in my mind that black people like me didn't belong in AA meetings, I went to the Soweto rally. And then all the doubt was gone. So that reservation was killed. And then I got introduced to the steps. You know, step one, there's a problem. I understood my life was unmanageable. I couldn't argue with that. Accepted it. Then two and three, hope and a solution. I liked it. And then 4 to 9 with the action steps, and 11 and 12, maintenance. And that's what's working for me now. But there are 5 pillars that work for me. One is meetings. I still need to go to meetings. It's where I belong. It's where I listen to other people who are just like me. I need that all the time. Secondly, doing the step work on a daily basis is working for me. 3 is having a sponsor and sponsoring others. And having a sponsor is so awesome. There's no reason for me to be alone. There's someone who's, you know, gone before me, is wise. She's like my life raft. You know, I'm never alone. And the 4th thing is my relationship with my higher power. And that came, you know, in a special way because I knew all the time there was something looking out for me, but I didn't know what it was. When I was younger and I went to church, I believed there was a God, but he was a God of punishment. Because I remember, like, even when I ate cheese in church, I would get a stomach ache, and that's because God didn't like it. So he was, yeah, God of punishment. But I was allowed to choose a God of my understanding, a God that I wanted, with all the characteristics of what I'd want him to be. And the moment I did that, I started establishing a relationship with him, and that is working for me. Finally, what really works for me a lot is doing service, because I am so grateful for this gift that I've received freely from all the people that I've come across in the fellowship, people who just share and share and just, you know, they ask for nothing in return. And what I can do is do that for someone else. You know, I just wish I could do so much more to show that this program really, really does work. And service also helps me to get out of my own head. You know, my head is very busy. I'm still bipolar, so I've got to keep that in check. But the program helps me with that. It really does, because by doing my daily inventories, I can monitor my behavior and everything, and I can get the help that I need. And just on a side note, this is actually my first Easter not being in a hospital, and I'm really grateful. And finally, the other gift that has also been given to me is with my health. You know, my blood counts are very high. My doctor asked me what else I'm drinking apart from my treatment, and I say the 12 steps. And my blood count is like, I can't transmit the virus to anyone, so I'm just like normal, and I'm very grateful for that. So I'd just like to say in closing, I'm just grateful for this program. It works, it really does, but it's a program of action. If I don't put in the work, nothing will happen. I've got to work at it, work at it, work at it. And what I like, my favorite line in the big book is, you know, we're trudging the road towards happy destiny, and that is what it is. We're gliding along happily to get somewhere, but it is a trudge, putting one foot in the other, day in front of the other, day after day. And what I've got to do on a daily basis, take my life, this program, one day at a time, because that's how it works. And I've got three things that I must do every morning: get up, get dressed, and show up for the day. And my higher power will take care of the rest. And that's how I live this program. Thanks for letting me share.
Good morning, friends. My name is Sabelo. I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. I would like to thank the convention committee for asking me to share my experience, strength, and hope with you all this morning. Friends, I come from KZN, and my home group is the Belvedere group. And friends, as I say, I come from KZN, where Smirnoff Vodka has been in fashion for quite long, long, long time. Friends, I'm saying that because, you know, my last drink on the 6th of December in 2013 was 2 straight Smirnoff vodka with no beers, there was a dash, but the way I was so critical, my drinking has escalated, I wasn't no more using dash. I was only like, I liked it clean, sweep it, and then put dash after. So I was totally, I don't know how can I explain it. But friends, you know, I want to thank God, you know, because when I'm talking about that day, friends, I was in a hopeless state of mind. I had tried everything. And I remember on that day, friends, I had no intentions of drinking. You know, when a friend of mine came to my house and said, Sabelo, let's take a walk. Let's go to the village. We're going to do some things. I told him straight, you know what, my friend? If you think that today you're going to take me there and then you think I'm going to be drinking, just forget. He said, no, don't worry. Just give me company. We'll go there. And then we went. I don't know what happened. We did what we did. I don't know what happened. Eventually we find ourselves, I found myself with him in the bar. And then he bought the straight of Smirnoff and he put it there. And then he took his glass, put his eyes there. He started pouring his thing. And then I said, you know what? You know, this man, he must be lying. You know, today I'm not going to drink. And then I took my cigarette and smoked. But friends, you know, the obsession was so powerful, you know. After 3 sips that he had,
the obsession was so powerful to me and said, hey, you know, Sabelwe, this thing never made you sick. Just take one thing. And then what I did, I took my glass, I poured one sip, and then I triggered the allergy. And then after that, I don't know what happened, and we drank the whole bottle. And he bought the other one, we took it home, and then something happened. But on that day, friends, let me share with you, on that day, friend, I was not enjoying my drinking because every time I was picking up that glass, there was that inner voice that was talking to me, asking me questions, saying to me, no, Sabelo, when are you going to stop this thing? You know, can't you see your life is so unmanageable? There's nothing working out for you. Why can't you see? Why can't you stop? Because friends, beside on that day, I had tried so many things to stay stopped and I couldn't. I had tried everything, as I say, Smirnoff was my favorite drink. I had tried to quit Smirnoff, and then I said, okay, Sabelo, let me, we'd rather do ciders. I drank ciders, but same thing happened. I even left the town where I grew up. I grew up in Tonga. I said, no, maybe because you grew up here with these people, with these friends here, maybe if you can go somewhere and work somewhere where people don't know you, maybe you will learn how to drink socially, okay? Maybe you'll be able to control your drinking when you can go. You will be more responsible when you're far away than your parents, far away from people who knows you. I went to Empangeni. I got a job there. I tell you, friends, my first payment, I never made it to the house I was renting. My landlord had to come and collect rent in the shipping. Friends, it was so, you know, I was so tired, you know. And on that day, on the 6th, you know, as I say, I never got drunk. Because each and every time when I took out that drink, when I was having, drinking that alcohol, because there was that inner voice that was talking to me, asking me those questions, that when are you gonna stay stopped? And, you know, I remember I told my friend when we was in the house, I told him, you know what, my friend, I don't think this is working for me. I'd rather go home. Because I could see him and there was three of us, him and one of our friends, they were drunk. But I wasn't feeling anything. I even said to them, hey, by that time I was still smoking dark. So I even asked them, hey, is any one of you who's got one parcel of dark? Maybe, you know, because I wanted to, you know, to boost myself, you know, maybe to feel that black. But one friend of mine gave me, and I made, and while smoking that thing, I told them, you know what, this is my last gift. And they didn't show any concern. They didn't believe me. I told them, this is my last gift. I don't know where that came from, but I told them, this is my last gift. And after I finished smoking that thing, I told them, friends, I'm leaving now. I'm going to pour one shot, and I think this is going to be my last shot, and I'm leaving now. And I did that, and I went home. But friends, I tell you, when I went home and I tried to sleep, I couldn't sleep. I couldn't sleep, friends. Now, those thoughts, those questions inside me, they were flooding, like, you know, they were overcrowding my head, and I started crying. Friends, I never cried like on that day. I cried on the 6th of December. Friend, I never cried, you know, with all the jail time, all the hospitalization, all the scars that I had encountered while I was drinking, but I never cried like on that day. I was crying for one thing, to be sober. Besides being sober, I wanted to change who I am. I didn't want the Sabelo whom I was. I even, when I couldn't sleep, I called my brother and said, my younger brother, he's my last born. I called him. The reason I called him is because I had admitted to him about 2 weeks ago and told him I had a drinking problem. And then he went and looked for a place where I was going to get help. He came back. I was drunk on that day. He came back. He told me, Sabelo, I'll find a place for you. Tomorrow, they said, I can come with you. I said, who is this man? Think he can take me to rehab? Who is him? What does he think? Me na lo is kok. I said, mina ma rehab. Yang joaela lo. I said, no. And I didn't go there. But on that day, I called him. I said to him, you know, when I called him, friends, I asked him one question. I said, who I am? He said, you are Sabelo. He said, you know, he looked at me in shock, like, hey, my brother has gone mad or something. I'm asking him my name. He told me he was, I'm Sabelo. I said to him, no, my friend, I'm not Sabelo. He said, how come, old brother? I said, you know why? I've been living a life of a lie. I've been lying to myself. I'm not Sabelo, you know. You know, the Sabelo I know died long time ago, 17 years ago. Because, friends, I had drank for 17 years. I told him straight that the Sabelo I know died long time ago. Friends, I had ambitions, you know, in life. But none of those, I couldn't fulfill any of those ambitions, you know. Nothing was really happening in my life. I was not progressing anyhow, you know. I told him straight that, you know, I'm not the Sabelo that you think I am. I've been lying to myself, you know. This is not who I am. And then he said, you know, for the first time, as I was talking to him, the tears were flooding in my face like, I don't know. And then for the first time, he hugged me and he said to me, don't worry, brother, things will work up. God will find you a way. I thought, no, I got no God. God will never do anything for me. Because why, friends? I have broken so many people's heart. I've had hurt so many people. That's what was going on in my head, thinking about all the things, all the wrongs I have done to other people. And I told him that I don't think I stand a chance. He said, no. But I said to him, my final words, I said to him, you know what, brother? Tomorrow morning, just take me there. He said, where? I said, to the place that you said you got for me. He said, okay. And then he left my room. And then, friends, immediately after he left, I started packing my bags. 4 o'clock in the morning, I went to shower. 5 o'clock, I took the first bus. I gave him 20 rand. I said, you know what, bro? You will follow me. He said, why so ill? I told him, you know why? I don't want any of my friends to see me. I don't want any of my friends to come and say, hey, let's go and take out the papalas, okay? You'll meet me there. And then he took the money. But he looked me, he never believed me because he thought maybe I would double cross him. I went and waited for him somewhere. He came and then he took me to rehab. And I told him never to tell my family too that I was going to the rehab. The reason I was doing that, friends, is because I have seen people going to rehab and coming back, going back to what they've been doing. So I didn't want that to happen to me too. So we went to the rehab. The first question that the supervisor asked me, may his soul rest in peace. He's late now. The first question he asked me, are you an alcoholic? I said, no, I'm not an alcoholic. He said, no, my friend, if you're not an alcoholic, then we can't help you here. I said, ow. I said to him, okay, maybe I am an alcoholic. He said, maybe. I said, yeah, maybe. The reason I said maybe is because I wanted him to admit me. I said, maybe I am an alcoholic. He said, okay. And then we did some paperwork and all. And then he admitted me. Fortunately, on that day, it was a meeting day. There was a meeting. You know, friends, I still remember that day. It was the 7th of December when I made my first meeting, you know. I remember a person, I forgot his name, a person who read chapter 5. But you know, when he said, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. I said, yeah, maybe I came to the right place. Because friends, I was willing to do anything to stay sober. And then when I heard that person share, I didn't understand what was going on, but the only thing I could relate was the fact that, you know, these people had been calling themselves alcoholic, and I have been denying that for 17 years. And for us black people, you know, when you call me an alcoholic, hey, I can strangle you to death. For me, it's an insult. It is just an insult. You call me an alcoholic, especially with us, the Zulus. Call me an alcoholic. Hey, stawa, stawa, mean stawa. Hey. But on that day, I admitted to myself, I said, yeah, maybe I am one of these people. I am an alcoholic. And then, friends, in the rehab, I made so many meetings. I stayed there for 14 days. It wasn't so long. I came out on the 21st of December. Friends, you must understand, when a man decides to quit alcohol on the festive season, that man must have been beaten so bad. It was difficult, but I managed. With the grace of God, I managed. I don't know how. I managed because I was making meetings. But friends, to answer the question of the topic of today, it took me 13 months while I was in the fellowship, while I was making meetings and all. It took me 13 months. I was coming to the meetings. I was trying to do everything that was asked for me to do in order to stay sober. But there was one thing short. Why was I not changed? Friends, I was still a self-centered individual. I was still filled with anger, anxiety, resentments, and so on. And that used to worry me, friends, and that used to worry me in such a way that it almost landed me straight where I wanted to come out from, where it was in prison. I say that, friends, because I was involved in a stupid fight, and I assaulted someone, and he went and laid charges. And fortunately, this is South Africa, you know South Africa. When you got money, the detective came to me, and then because of my humility, I think it was God's intervention, you know, because of my humility. It was the Friday when the detective came to me. I explained to them what happened, and then they said, you know what, my friend, we were supposed to take you and lock you out, but you know, we won't do that. Don't you have some cold drink there for us? Then? Because I didn't want to go there where I used to go, and I gave them some cold drink, and then they said, but make sure Monday you come to court. I went to court on Monday, and on Monday I had to speak to that person, ask him to drop the charges, and I had to pay him 500 rand. So friends, I just want to say to you, I paid 500 rands for me to get to adapt to the program. Because it was after that court day that I came back and decided, no man, I need to do something about myself. I am sober, but why am I not content? Why I am not happy? Why am I still behaving like a drunken person? Because this is all the things that I was... The reason I came to the fellowship was the fact that I wanted to change. But why were I not changed? It was after I embarked with my steps that I learned that I was dry drunk for 13 months. And friends, being dry drunk is much more painful than being active drunk. It was after I started to believe that only a power greater than myself will restore me to sanity. And after I believed that, I had to make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. in order for me to have a spiritual awakening sufficient to bring about recovery, I had to surrender to him. Because being self-centered, with all my anxiety, all my guilt and remorse that I'm feeling, and eventually I was going to go back and drink. Had I not done that steps, those steps, had I not made attempt to work the program, I was gonna go back and drink. I wouldn't have an everlasting sobriety. I would have been content like I am today. Today, friends, I am so happy with myself. I have learned to accept the things that I cannot change. The fellowship has given me the spiritual tools that will enable me to deal with the day-to-day challenges of life. Because, friends, that the fact that I'm sober now does not mean that the challenges will not come my way. And it is even worse now, because there is no chemical, which is alcohol, that will reduce my emotions when they start flooding into me. And for me, I have to have God with me. It's only God who can do that for me. And for me, friends, that is how it has worked for me. It is that power greater than myself. And I want to thank him, because wouldn't have I done my steps, I would have been sober. Friends, in order for me to stay stopped, I have to help the still suffering alcoholics. And it is the spiritual awakening. You know, step 12 explains it clearly. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and practice these principles in all our affairs. In order for me to live a happy, joyous, and free life, I have to practice these principles in all my affairs. And in order for me to carry that message, I have to have God with me. And I want to thank you for listening. May God bless you and keep you until you.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.